Remember last week's news, the big meeting between China's President Hu and President Obama? Well, when you hear our conversation today, it will be easy to imagine Hu saying to his American counterpart, "You think you've got problems with health care?" China is launching an ambitious plan to expand health coverage, an acknowledgement that after years of focusing on economic growth, it's time to rebuild a neglected health care system. So how's that going? Well, here now's Martha Biebinger took a health care study trip to China through a course at the Harvard School of Public Health. And let's hear what she found. First of all, Martha, lucky you. That must have been wonderful.
Fascinating.
Well, tell us more. You just assume that most people in China have basic care. It's a communist country, so you feel that everyone has basic care. True or false?
It was false for a long time during the 80s and 90s. And it was that period, Robin, after Chairman Mao died and Deng Xiaoping came in and he put so much investment into the infrastructure. Well, that money came from the social services. And it meant that the uninsured rate in the rural areas climbed to 90, 93, 94%. So very few people had any kind of coverage in the rural areas. In the cities, it stayed around 30%.
And when you say coverage, by whom?
Well, the government was providing some coverage, a very, very basic plan through the years of Mao. Then it dropped to basically nothing, and now they're coming back.
Okay, well, let's find out about that. First of all, China says it's going to cover all its citizens by 2020. How?
Well, they are going to build on two plans that they have had for a while. We're not talking about a Canadian nationalized health insurance plan. We're talking about a plan for the rural areas and then a plan in the cities that employers really contribute quite a lot to. So building on those two things, they hope to have coverage that's at least thin. It doesn't look like the insurance that you and I have. It's much more limited benefits. And the quality that it carries also different, but there will be something out there for everyone.
What are some of those services that they might get in China that we might not get?
It's pretty routine here for doctors to prescribe CAT scans, for example. Those machines exist in the big hospitals in China, but a good 60% of the population would not have access to them. Many people would go to a county hospital for a delivery so that they can have a C-section. A lot of the testing you need to do that is not available in the rural areas. Standard cancer therapies that we've come to assume we can have access to, they just aren't there.
Well, let's start then with the rural. Let's get a glimpse of healthcare in rural China. Where are you taking us?
We're going to go, Robin, to a small hospital on the rocky green slopes of the Hubei province in central China. Patients of all ages pace cracked linoleum floors at the Xiamenshu Township Health Center. Some huddle around a coal-burning stove in a large waiting room. They smoke and talk. Many are attached to IV bags that dangle from hooks in the ceiling. In a room nearby, Wen Zhuyang nurses her four-day-old daughter, Snow. She already has a seven-year-old son. Wanli Liu at the Harvard School of Public Health explains that Yang is a member of the two ethnic minority and can have more than one child.
So this is special family planning policy, very favorable to the ethnic minority groups.
Like half the mothers in China, Yang had a C-section. The procedure cost 1,500 yuan, about $225, a price set by the government. Yang's share, $50. The average annual income in Yang's region is the equivalent of $3,400. The World Bank says medical expenses are a common reason for bankruptcy in rural China, but Yang says she can't afford this charge.
They grow traditional Chinese medicine, herbs. Their income are stable and decent.
In a separate building across a cement courtyard, a doctor who practices traditional Chinese medicine tests the pulses of a stooped elderly farmer, Niu Bai.
I asked whether he comes here often. He said yes, I come here on a regular basis for the back pain.
The price for this visit is preset, about $4.50. Bai gets additional government assistance because he's a veteran. The traditional medicine doctor hands Bai a prescription for herbs he will boil into a tea and drink. It's the only remedy that relieves his back pain. Bai gathers up his hat and papers and pulls a plastic card from a deep pants pocket.
Oh, it's a debit card.
Okay.
For the medical treatment. Yes. So it's like a medical savings account. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rural residents like Niu Bai can put a few dollars a year on these cards to pay for things government health insurance doesn't cover. Even with insurance, most patients pay half of the cost of their health care. Fascinating. That's reporter Martha Biebinger in a rural hospital in China. And Martha, you mentioned that patients like the farmer you met, Niu Bai, know the cost of their visit before they go. How so? Are things posted?
Yes. In this case, there were handwritten notes on the wall behind the doctor's desk that Mr. Bai could refer to. In a major hospital like you would see in downtown Boston, they'd be on a neon board rolling across and changing sometimes by the minute. But they always know, whether it's an X-ray, an ultrasound, whatever, they know what they're paying.
And they could use these debit cards or government insurance. But are there people who go without care? I mean, what's the safety net? If there's someone who can't afford that $450 that he could afford, are there, I mean, did you see people in the streets who were sick who weren't getting care? Does the government say, okay, if you really have nothing, we will cover everything?
That's the part that they need to build up between now and 2020. There is not really a safety net yet, although they're starting to add the pieces of that, but there are people going without care.
And we've heard about protests in hospitals and clinics in rural China over the cost and quality of care. Did you see any?
We heard shouting in a mental health hospital. We saw people unfurling some banners. This happens in the cities as well. There is not the same level of trust and respect for doctors across China as there is, for the most part, here in the U.S. And some of that is understandable, Robin, because the medical training across China is not very good. So just staying in the rural areas of the country for a minute, we'll hear a bit from Qing Song Huang, who's the president of a 175-bed hospital in the Hubei province. He's describing his staff.
He says, first of all, they're understaffed and the staff quality is pretty low. Not so many of them have college education. Most of them are high school or middle school.
And Robin, there's also a broad range of physician salaries in addition to a range of quality. Doctors at big city teaching hospitals earn at least 10 times what someone with less training, who still is called a doctor in these rural health centers, will make. The government is asking the big city hospitals, where the doctors are better trained, to partner with the rural hospitals to boost both their experience and their know-how, and that's starting to happen in some pilot programs.
A quick look at healthcare in rural China with Here and Now's Martha Biebinger, who traveled there through a course at the Harvard School of Public Health. By the way, she also has a slideshow for you. It's at hereandnow.org. Check that out. And when we come back, Martha will take us to the big cities. Also later today, American Healthcare, which has become expert at treating bullet wounds and head injuries. But a doctor says there's still a lot to learn from Gabrielle Giffords. We'll hear about her long road ahead now that the congresswoman has moved to a rehab hospital in Texas. That's still to come today. Back in a minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide, on the web at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Here and Now's Martha Biebinger about providing quality health care for 1.3 billion people. We think we've got problems. That's the challenge the Chinese government faces as it tries to rebuild its health care system, in many ways a system neglected during the country's economic boom. Martha spent 3 weeks in China visiting both rural and urban health care facilities. This was through a course at the Harvard School of Public Health. And Martha, before the break, we were talking about the cost and quality of care in China's huge rural regions. Now take us to the cities, the mega cities like Shanghai and Beijing. And we understand that these city dwellers are, by and large, healthier than residents of rural areas.
Yeah, that's generally true. So the farmer, for example, that we heard from just a few minutes ago, Robin, lives in an area of China where the life expectancy is about 70, the low 70s. Residents of Shanghai live on average 10 years longer. Professor Wanli Liu, who runs the China Initiative at the Harvard School of Public Health, says closing that gap is one of China's top healthcare priorities.
The disparities is probably one of the most significant in the whole world. You know, disparities in access to healthcare between the urban and the rural, between the rich and poor, and between regions, even within the rural areas, you know.
Liu says, Robin, that it isn't really clear, though, who's going to take this on.
Well, and that's interesting. I mean, the biggest disparity in the world, you know, acknowledging that. And the Chinese are reinvesting in healthcare in a big way, spending $124 billion on this reform effort. Seems like a lot, but you tell us some of the doctors and hospitals say it's not enough. Why?
That's because while the vast majority of hospitals in China are public hospitals, most doctors are employees, whether they're in a hospital or a community health center, the government is only putting up 10 to 30% of their budgets. Half of the money that runs these hospitals and healthcare centers, Robin, comes from a markup on the cost of drugs. So let's say you get a prescription for an antibiotic. The hospital or the doctor is automatically going to add 15%.
It's like a tax.
It's like a tax. In fact, it's not a tax that's monitored very carefully. So in some cases, it's up to 50%. It's however much money the hospital or the health center thinks it needs to meet the budget. That's where their cushion is, on that markup from the drugs.
And this is the way it's supposed to be done. This is legal.
The 15% is legal. Everything above that is not, but not carefully monitored.
So let's follow this through. It would seem that would encourage doctors then to write prescriptions that they can put this higher tax on.
It's a big problem. 47% of every dollar spent on healthcare in China is spent on prescriptions, compared to the U.S., where it's about 12%. The government talks about ending that markup to get rid of the incentive to overprescribe drugs, but where would the rest of the money come from? That's not clear. And there's a lot of resistance to starting to limit what doctors can order and what patients can get.
So you say it's not clear. What, though, are Chinese hospitals thinking of doing, or maybe already doing, to bring in more money?
They are already starting to expand VIP services. So there's a huge income gap in China. People can afford very good care at the high end, and hospitals are designing services for that. So you've got the very nice waiting rooms with the cushy chairs and the music on the top floors of a hospital, and the metal chairs out in the middle of the open for the waiting rooms for the general public. They're also starting to open specialty care centers for the types of care that make more money, orthopedics and cancer and such. They're doing a lot of the same things that U.S. hospitals do
to make money. I was just going to say, wow.
Sounds familiar, right?
Yeah, people who have money pay for better care, and the government provides care, or helps out at least with care, for people who have no money. That's starting to sound like capitalism.
Yeah. This is the introduction of the private sector thinking into the healthcare market. And the government's not comfortable with this. We heard from Lihai Chow, who's part of the Ministry of Health, and he argues that government-owned hospitals have lost sight of their public mission.
The public hospitals shouldn't strive for profits anymore. If the public hospitals have lost the meanings of social functions in the market, there will be no existence for these kind of public hospitals.
So, Robin, you have the government telling hospitals to serve the general public and not focus so much on the privileged, but the government isn't providing the money to do that.
During President Hu Jintao's meeting with President Obama, the U.S. and China announced the formation of this new public-private healthcare partnership. What's this?
This is a partnership between some agencies, government agencies in the U.S. and China, and also some companies. They're mostly pharmaceuticals or medical tech companies that are trying to get, frankly, looks like more of a foothold in China. There are many companies that are already doing business in China. In fact, some insurance companies and hospitals. The government has said, we want more private industry in the healthcare sector.
Really?
Yes,
American
they
insurance
have.
Companies are selling insurance?
They're not. Well, they're selling it. Aetna, for example, is selling an insurance product to people who can afford those high-end services. And those are people who understand what it means to buy health insurance. The vast majority of the Chinese population doesn't really get this concept yet of paying for something in advance and maybe not using it right away. We talked to Haking Chen, who is the director for Aetna in China, and he thinks that there's a great opportunity.
Healthcare will be another industry or sector that U.S. can export a lot to China. China is definitely on the learning curve for quality and affordable healthcare.
But this won't be an easy market for these folks to enter. The regulations are different. The financing is different. The networks of hospitals and doctors, it's all different. So it may be a few years before we see any significant penetration there.
But that is fascinating that this communist country is telling private American industry, come on in and help us with our healthcare reform. Meanwhile, Martha, just this was a personal trip to you, weeks in China, going places where most tourists don't go. Just a couple of images that you bring back.
So back to that community health center on the rocky green slopes of the Hubei province, people would walk out of there carrying IV bags. They think that taking medication that way, for some reason, is just the way to go. And they would walk into them smoking. People smoke everywhere in health centers and hospitals and such. And there is no heat, Robin. That is one of the things that really amazed me. A major hospital, and patients were under comforters, and the doors are wide open because it doesn't matter. There's no heat, and it's 30 degrees out.
Huh. And from there, you go into the city, and there's Aetna selling insurance. Here now is Martha Biebinger, who, as we said, spent 3 weeks in China studying that country's healthcare system through a course at Harvard School of Public Health. Martha, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
And don't forget her slideshow at herenow.org. Look, I'm looking right now. There's a mother with her small child walking down the street with an IV coming out of the child, just like she said. So check it out, herenow.org. Tomorrow on Here and Now, what do you want President Obama to say in his State of the Union address? We'll hear from folks across the country. That's tomorrow. Latest news is next, Here and Now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com, and the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.